21 minutes to go till the top of the hour here on Downtown on a Wednesday. Downtown presented by Hollywood Casino Hotel and Raceway at 500 Main Street in downtown Bangor. Rich Kimble here, Bruce Pratt joining us. It's time for Sports Lit 101, and this week we're pleased to be joined by the author of the book Cheated, the UNC Scandal, The Education of Athletes and the Future of Big Time College Sports. Jay Smith, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a remarkable book, and it's one of those that I feel like I've read it once, and I need to go back and reread it to pick up some more of the details here. As you began to uncover this, did it have that sense of being like an onion, that the more you learned, the deeper and deeper you got, and were you amazed at how deep this whole thing went?
That's exactly right. It's very much like peeling away the layers of an onion. And when I started my own activism, the book, as you know, is co-written with a friend and colleague, Mary Willingham. When I started my activism back in 2010 and 2011, my only concern was to get administrators to divulge the full truth about what they knew, and particularly what they knew about the academic dimension of the UNC scandal that burst onto the scene basically as an impermissible benefits scandal in May of 2010. And the further I got into my own agitation for disclosure and divulging the truth, the more I recognized that the problems were deep and broad, and I came to understand better why the university struggled so mightily to cover up the full breadth of the fraud. And then when I met Mary in the fall of 2012, Mary, being an athletics insider who knew all about how academic support and academic counseling worked, we both recognized that we had to write a book about this because UNC had no interest in disclosing the full details.
Hi, Jay. This is Bruce Pratt. One of the questions I had on anybody's short list of the best land-grant institutions in America, Chapel Hill is there. Do you think that in part this was able to go on because no one just would have suspected this would happen at Carolina?
Right. I think that is part of the story, even including many, many people here on the Chapel Hill campus. I mean, we were very complacent. We wanted to believe the best about our athletic program, and there was this sort of mythology built up around it that had us thinking that such corruption was virtually impossible here. Not the institution of Dean Smith and of Bill Friday, just not possible. And so, yes, that was one of the factors in fueling the fraud for so many years.
Jay,
in addition to UNC's desire to protect its reputation, I think, as a public ivy, as a prestigious institution that had its priorities straight, that introduced a kind of an insidious desire to look the other way, or a willingness to look the other way when malfeasance or suspected malfeasance rose to the surface. So, as we suggest in the book, in one of our chapters, we happen to think that universities that aspire to high rankings and prestige reputations are actually, in some ways, more vulnerable to this kind of corruption than other places because they have, in a way, more to protect, more to cover.
Jay, we've talked about this on a couple of occasions on the program, but for anyone who may not have heard, can you walk us through the genesis of the undoing of the program there, how it began with these paper classes, where it started, and how it built?
Sure. Well, I mean, Mary and I looked at records going all the way back to the 1980s, which no one else has done, evidently. And we found evidence that the origins of the course fraud really began in 1988, sometime between 1988 and 1990. When there was clearly a desire on the part of the basketball academic counselor and her friends in the African and Afro-American Studies Department to help weak students on the men's basketball team. And Julius Nongoro, who was the chair of that department, began offering independent studies courses for these players gave them generous grades, higher grades than they earned in normal classes at the university. And this is how the pipeline began. This is how the pipeline was laid. Once the basketball academic counselor realized that there was this department faculty member, chairman, actually, who was going to be generous toward athletes, she started sending more and more weak basketball players there. And it started out for the first few years as an essentially men's basketball scam. And by the mid to late 90s, it grew to encompass football and many other sports as well. And by the late 90s, in addition to independent studies, the department was offering fake lecture classes, just scheduling lecture classes, pretending that they were meeting like any other lecture class, but operating them as very low standard independent study courses. And they did this in the hundreds.
One of the questions
of students took these courses.
To follow up on that, a lot of athletes are taking these courses. There's the requirement is to complete one paper. I teach at the University of Maine. I find that odd to begin with, but
then that
one paper was not even graded necessarily by a faculty member.
That's right. Yeah, these were the most egregious offenses. The most egregious courses were these courses scheduled by the administrative assistant, with or without the knowledge of the department chairman. We don't really know. But that administrative assistant, who, of course, did not have faculty status, was the person who collected the papers and who determined which grades were going to be awarded. And if the papers were read or looked at all, it was only very lightly, and by someone who did not, in many cases, have faculty status. It was this admin assistant.
And also, in those courses, as you mentioned before, if I'm correct, the average grades were far better than the GPAs of these students in non-paper classes.
Absolutely.
And no one caught that.
Clear as day, yes.
We're talking with Jay Smith, along with Mary Willingham, the author of Cheated on the UNC Scandal. And, Jay, there were enough layers and enough people between the people overseeing these courses and the head coaches of the major programs that there was a level of plausible deniability there. But how could coaches not have known?
Yeah, precisely. I mean, that is our question. They have plausible deniability built into the system. It works very well for them. You know, head coaches are rarely held accountable for course fraud of this nature, although Jim Boeheim, unlucky Jim Boeheim, was one of the few who actually got nailed. But coaches usually escape accountability for that reason. They have these layers of academic counselors and other bureaucrats who do the technical work for them. But particularly in basketball, it is really impossible to imagine that the head coach would not be aware of the academic itineraries of the 13 or so players for whom he is responsible. I mean, he goes into the homes of these young people when they're his recruits, and he promises their moms and dads and grandparents that he's going to take care of them, and he's going to get them their educations, and that he's going to ride herd on them, and so on. So to turn around then, after a scandal has erupted, and to say, oh, gosh, I knew nothing about that, it's a kind of confidence game.
Well, you also... You also point out that the University of Washington, Michigan, and Auburn had similar kinds of situations occur there. What I want people to know about this book is you're not trying to burn the house down. We're trying to destroy the University of North Carolina Chapel. You're very proud of teaching there, teaching history. Do you think that the corner's been turned in these things, or will there just be new games that will come up other places or even maybe again at Chapel Hill?
Yeah. Well, my co-author and I would like to think that we have turned a corner of some sort, that the temperature has shifted, at least in the national conversation, not so much here in Chapel Hill where we encounter quite a bit of resistance, actually, but nationally, it really seems that the discussions around college sports have changed their tone. And there are some pending class action suits, as you know, that, depending on how they are resolved, could really bring the NCAA to its knees, including one in which UNC figures centrally, a class action suit filed by two former athletes who allege that their well, that UNC and the NCAA defrauded them of their educations. And if that becomes a class action suit, as they hope it will, and it's led by a very high-powered attorney out of Washington, that could be a devastating blow to the NCAA, in which case we would have to start over from scratch and maybe get things right.
Well, it is a remarkable book, an eye-opening read. Jay Smith, thank you so much for making time for us this afternoon. We appreciate you being with us.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've done great work. Thanks.
11 minutes to go before the top of the hour. We're back.